And welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, your host, and Bill Jack from Worldview Academy in studio with me. And today we're going to take a quick peek at what's going on in cryptocurrency, and then we're going to move on to, well, SpaceX and what's happening with space exploration, the settlements on Mars. That in just a moment. But first, Bitcoin's back up to $66,500. It started out at zero. It started out at zero. Now it's 66.5. These crypto investments in thin air, zeros and ones, are hitting a pretty high standard at this point. The mad rush into crypto has produced a $2.6 trillion market cap. That means there's $2.6 trillion invested by human beings around the globe into cryptocurrencies, up from $200 billion in early 2020. That's a 13-fold increase in just a year. That's pretty impressive. Meanwhile, the stock market cap increased from $35 trillion to $50 trillion over the same time frame. That's a 30% increase. And gold, which, as I see it, would be the sensible capitalization of the world now, has increased from $1,530 to $1,764 per ounce over the same time period, 17%. So gold gets 17%, stock market gets 30%, and cryptocurrency gets 1,300%. This is out of control, my friends. Yeah. But here's the good news. Cryptocurrency can be used in El Salvador and Tesla. And you can buy a Tesla. Oh, wait, hang on. Tesla just announced they won't accept Bitcoin, so that's the latest. Okay, I'm sorry, it's going either way right now. I'm not sure.
Can you buy a ticket to outer space, though?
I bet you can with Bitcoin. Well, no, you can't do that. They just canceled that. It's not a currency yet, but it's a really good investment. Well, the dividends are amazing. Well, oh, wait, there are no dividends. It's not a currency. It's not an investment.
What is it?
It's crypto. It's crypto, Bill. Yeah.
Is that another name for Ponzi?
Well, I've got a basic introduction to the world and to economics for 14-year-olds. It's coming out in just a few months. How the World Runs and Your Part in It.
How can I pay for it?
Bitcoin. Throw me a Bitcoin. Yeah. I'll be okay with that. Okay. You got one on you?
Yeah. Your catch.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Got a little piece of nothing there just for a second.
Yeah.
So, like
throwing hugs and kisses to my kids when they were little.
Yeah, exactly. So what's the best thing to use for money then? Now, this is what I put into this basic introduction to economy for 14-year-olds. Don't you agree, Bill, this is about the time where even 14-year-olds should know something about economics?
I would hope.
Along with the rest of us. And the reason I wrote it for 14-year-olds is because I needed it sort of at my level. Are you with me here? So here's a little piece of it. Economists list several important factors that are needed if you will use a commodity for money. It must be, one, durable. Paper or a basket of fresh fish would not be very durable. Okay? So you wouldn't want that. So it's got to be durable. It's got to be portable. Elephants are not very portable, and they're not divisible either. So that's a problem. So you can't use elephants for money. Divisible, pianos are not divisible. You would not want to use pianos for money, for example. Okay? Recognizable and universally desired, manure or fertilizer is not universally desired. Do you agree with that?
It's divisible.
It's divisible, but it's not universally desired.
It's easily spread.
Yeah. It's got to be scarce. That means there's a high value in relation to volume and weight. Beans and salt are too easily obtained and therefore are not scarce. That's a problem. It's got to be stable and predictable in value. Stable and predictable in value. Air conditioners and patio furniture in northern Alaska, probably not desired in the wintertime. So we give these examples. Salt is not very portable, durable, scarce, or stable, but it is recognizable, universally desired, and divisible. So, you know, we have these examples. Gold is durable, portable, divisible, recognizable, universally desired, scarce, and maintains stable value. So that makes gold desirable. Silver is more divisible than gold and a little less scarce. Therefore, gold is usually considered a good place to hold your wealth and a little less convenient for day-to-day exchanges. But what about pictures of dictators and politicians on paper? What about that? You know, little pieces of paper with pictures of dictators and politicians on the face of them. What about that? They're portable and divisible, but they're not very durable. They're not scarce, and they're not stable in value. That's a problem.
It's a problem.
And they're only sometimes universally desired for the next year and a half.
Yeah.
For the next year and a half.
Yeah.
Talking about ferns. You know what a fern is, don't you?
No.
Federal Reserve note.
Oh.
Before the fern, or somewhere around the establishment of the fern, you had silver certificates that were developed around the 1880s and then it worked its way up to 1964. So you could take a silver certificate, which looked exactly like
a dollar bill. And it had just had silver certificate printed on it.
Yeah, somewhere. Redeemable by the U.S. Treasury
for
1 ounce of silver
right.
for a dollar. And so those silver certificates existed all the way back to 1888 and then all the way in 1964. And it looked exactly like the current dollar bill. And guess what happens to the silver certificates? They get pulled out. Why? Because
they don't want to redeem them.
Nobody wants to redeem a silver certificate dollar. I mean, the value right now is, what, 24 bucks, so you don't want that.
Right.
You don't want that. Okay, so that's what happened up until 1964. I think it was somewhat redeemable till 67 or 68, and then it was over.
My dad collected those because he had a lumberyard, and every time that one of those would come across the counter, he would put it aside.
Put it in his pocket.
Yeah.
Keep that one. All right, so friends, a good way to think about money is to ask the question, what is the most desirable and marketable thing in a society? People do not want to use cows for money because not everybody owns cows. It's hard to figure out how many cows to trade for a couch. People don't want to trade using horseshoes because not everybody owns horses. It's hard to figure out how many horseshoes you can trade for a loaf of bread anyway. So people don't consider something of value if it won't be of some value in the future. And that, my friends, is why you've got to be careful with what you call currency. And we'll be back with more in just a moment on the Generations Broadcast.
What happens when a culture that was established and guided by biblical principles abandons the faith and seeks to live by its own wisdom? In his latest groundbreaking work, Epic, The Rise and Fall of the West, Kevin Swanson unfolds the dramatic history of Western civilization, highlighting the phenomenal impact that Jesus Christ and his people have had upon the thought, culture, and institutions of the Christian West, as well as tracing the slow but devastating decline of Western civilization and the key factors that have led to our spectacular fall over the centuries. A sobering narrative of gospel hope, this book urges its reader to greater fervency in the work of discipleship and the development of an international vision for the church. This is truly a must-read for any Christian seeking to understand the times and seasons in which we live. You can claim your hardcover copy of Epic, The Rise and Fall of the West, by visiting generations.org/store today. That's generations.org/store.
And we're back on the Generations Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson with Bill Jack. Elon Musk has just been announced by Morgan Stanley as the next trillionaire. In fact, the first trillionaire. Well, if inflation continues, we're all going to be trillionaires.
Yeah. What does it mean to be a trillionaire?
Oh, hardly anything these days.
Yeah. Millionaires used to be the standard. Now it's billionaires, and now we got trillionaires.
Yeah, that's where we're headed. Well, Elon Musk, of course, has turned into a billionaire and the most wealthy man in the world in just the last 6 months, largely because, you know, a bunch of the lemmings are throwing all of their capital, or a great deal amount of their capital, into his two little ventures, Tesla and SpaceX. SpaceX was founded in 2002 by Elon Musk with the goal of reducing space transportation costs to enable the colonization of Mars. So that was his goal. So far, everybody's poured $100 billion into SpaceX in order to colonize Mars. Bill, if I came up to you and I said, Bill, I'm going to colonize Mars. Can I have your savings? Can you just give me your, you know, whatever it is, $26,000. Give me $26,000, Bill. I'm going to colonize Mars. What would you say? Are you from Mars? Is that what you'd say?
No, I'd say I'm going to go buy lottery tickets.
Okay. Right. But you're not going to give me your $26,000.
No, I think I'd get a better return on mine.
You probably would, yeah. You'd do a little bit better down there with the lottery thing than with SpaceX. SpaceX earns, get this, $1.6 billion per year, and it's valued, in other words, the stock value, is at $100 billion. Okay, compare that with Ford Motor Company. They make, you know, $127 billion a year. That's how much revenue they get. Okay. SpaceX gets $1.6 billion. Ford Motor Company has $127 billion of revenue. And Ford Motor Company is valued at $62 billion. About half of what SpaceX is valued at.
And I can drive a Ford.
You can drive a Ford. That's the difference there, isn't there? That's pretty good. Yeah. Tesla has $11 billion in revenue last year, and it's valued at $900 billion. Yeah. They cranked up $11 billion in revenue last year.
What did they sell?
We're not sure. But whatever the case was, they got $11 billion in revenue, and it's valued at $900 billion because all the lemmings have jumped in, and they have poured money into these Ponzi schemes. And Ford has $127 billion of revenue. You know, what is that? That's about 13 times what Tesla has. And it's valued at $62 billion. That's 1/20 of what Tesla is valued at.
So what we're talking about here is like the lyrics from that old song, Just the Two of Us.
How's it go?
Just the two of us. Making castles in the sky.
Making castles in the sky.
Yeah.
It's a castle in the sky.
Yeah.
I just want you to let that sink in, friends. Tesla. A pipe dream. $11 billion in revenue last year, valued at $900 billion. Elon Musk is the very picture, the ultimate image of nothingness. The emptiness and the total waste and the big worthless bubble of modern life and the modern economy. He is the poster boy for all of that. Can you think of a better example, Bill?
I wonder if he has a real wallet with real cryptocurrency in it.
Huh? Yeah.
You think? Do you think he carries around a real wallet?
No, he's got crypto.
Right.
Why would you need a wallet? You got crypto, and it's all in there.
Yeah, just making it
all
out
the zeros and ones are in there.
Just making it out of
they're
thin
all
air.
There.
Just making it out of thin air.
And of course, all this much ado about nothing. The only profit Elon Musk has ever made came from government enforced extortion of the other car companies. You know, gun to the head kind of thing. These other car companies making gas-powered cars instead of the battery-powered cars that use more carbon overall than gas-powered cars, by the way. At the end of the day, you know, people have calculated how many carbon credits it takes to build a battery for a Tesla. And then they've added to that, you know, all the coal that you've got to burn in order to keep that Tesla going 550,000 miles. And it turns out, yeah, it's a big scam. It's a huge scam. It's the most amazing scam in probably all of American history. Pretty amazing. But I want to get to this question, Bill, of whether or not to support this colonization of Mars. So I want to touch on this a little bit before we're done today. You know, do you remember a guy by the name of Rockefeller? He gave us some oil.
Mm-hmm.
Now oil has proved to be useful. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I had to think about it for a minute.
Yeah.
You know,
but
I couldn't remember any products made out of oil.
Haven't we used oil for a few products?
Except some of the stuff that I'm wearing and what you're looking through.
About 90% of life today. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So Rockefeller gave us oil. Carnegie gave us steel. Now, has steel turned out to be useful in your book?
I'm going to give it a thumbs up on that.
Okay. Okay. You've seen a few things made out of steel.
A few.
Good.
Yeah.
Henry Ford gave us a car.
Right.
Okay, that's been proved to be
okay. I think I see where you're headed.
Okay. Elon Musk gave us a spaceship to take us to Mars, which has proven to be an interesting pastime for rich people who have no idea what to do with all their useless Bitcoin investments, at least for the next 2 years. Now, do you see something of a contrast? There's real dominion, and then there's whatever Elon Musk is doing.
Once again, it's building castles in the sky.
It's castles in the sky. I think that's pretty much the right way to look at it.
Real
dominion is what, friends? Real dominion operates within God's law order. Real dominion provides useful things. Real dominion receives God's blessings. And real dominion, real science, has got to be done in the fear of God. That's so basic. So Elon Musk's goal to settle space is a pipe dream. Who in the right mind would want to move to Mars? You? Would you want to move to Mars? Do you know anybody in the right mind? I'm not talking about people not in the right mind.
Right.
I'm talking about people in the right mind would want to move to Mars.
No. We haven't colonized the moon, and yet we want to colonize.
Do you really want to go to the moon?
To the moon and back. And back.
You know, it's interesting. The goals of space exploration, we did a little research for this for God Made the World, our fifth grade science course. And here, the purpose of space exploration on the part of the American humanists was not to glory in God's power and wisdom. Actually, I think this is American God's providence. I'm sorry. This is American God's providence. But we've already spent something like $4, $5, $6 trillion on space exploration. But you understand, NASA held a symposium in 1996, and they were trying to explain the reason for spending all this money. Okay, so this was the symposium NASA put on. They concluded their discussion with their candid admission. Tallies of economic benefits over the years since Apollo have not created a compelling rationale for a federally funded space exploration program. The symposium speaker said that the main purpose of these scientific endeavors was the realization of human potential. One panelist admitted that space exploration would help men to discover wonders in our future, not just the wonders of technology, but the marvels of human evolution. So I'm not even sure how you would discover that.
No.
How do you get to the marvels of human evolution by walking around Mars? I'm still not getting that one. I guess they want to find a Martian. That must be it. Well, it's got to be extraterrestrial life.
Okay.
It's got to be the same thing that, you know, the wacky little tinfoil hat guy who keeps hoping that something happened down in New Mexico is thinking. It's got to be the same mindset. Do you think there's any difference between NASA and the wacky guy in the tinfoil hat?
Here's the difference. Remember when the Mars rover landed and sent back pictures, and it's supposed to be this dried up floodplain?
Yeah.
And how the rocks were all smoothed out by water. And they said they just got all giddy. The headlines read, scientists are giddy. Now, giddy scientists are a little frightening to me.
Mm-hmm.
And why were they giddy? Because they said this proves that Mars was once covered by water.
And therefore life.
Right. And those same scientists turn around and look at this planet, which is 74% covered by water, and they deny there ever was an event known as the flood. Did they find a single drop of water on Mars? No. What did they find? They found little green men.
Mm-hmm.
What they found was green money.
Oh yeah, that's not true.
Because it solidified their position as getting funding, and that's what they found. Not little green men, but the little green men's lost wallets full of money.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, friends, NASA's scientific reason for exploring the moon was to address fundamental questions about the history of the Earth, the solar system, the universe, about our place in them. And by the way, let me suggest to NASA and to the rest of you, the Word of God. Don't you see the difference between the ultimate epistemology of God's Word, the ultimate description of our metaphysic and teleology, determined by our faith, and that is the Word of God, and that which they're trying to find on Mars from that little green man using the little green money.
Yeah.
Anyway, and there's one other reason. Some scientists suggest that if human species would survive a meteorite crashing into the Earth, they need to find a bit of habitable planet elsewhere. But all of these explanations were based on the wrong worldview. You with me, Bill?
I agree.
The United States government doesn't believe in God, and that's the problem. The United States government has a worldview. People who spend $4 trillion on NASA, they have a worldview. They don't believe in God. And they believe that God would never sustain life on Earth from some wandering meteorite crashing into the Earth. They just don't believe that, based on the Noahic Covenant, that God said there will be no destruction of this world until he's good and ready to bring fire down upon it, of course. But here's the other thing, that God did not create Mars for human life. He created Earth for that purpose. And let me read from Genesis 1:26. Again, this question is important because you're President of the United States, Bill, and you're making the decision whether to spend $4 trillion on determining if there's life on Mars. You probably should check out Genesis 1:26. You know, that should inform your worldview. God said, let us make man in our image according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. I'm emphasizing one particular word. I'm sure you're getting it. It's the earth.
The
earth. The earth.
Oh, the.
The earth, yeah.
Oh, earth.
Oh, yeah. The earth, yes. So God created man in his image, in the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them. And then God blessed them. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over every living thing that moves on Mars. Oh, wait, no, that says on the earth. I'm sorry. Excuse me. That says on earth. And God's created purpose for the planets and the stars. Well, it's given to you in Genesis 1:14. So why Mars? Why does he create Mars? Why does he create these? For signs and seasons, days and years, for light, by night and day. Then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide them day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons, for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth. And so it was. Okay, so that's it. That's it. Should be pretty clear, friends. Now, here, let me just wrap up by saying this. Crazy science, which is what this is. Just crazy science. Barking up the wrong trees and spending a lot of money doing it, may I add. Crazy science goes well beyond the purposes of science in our day. Scientists just, was it yesterday, temporarily attached a pig's kidney to a human body, watched it begin to work. Researchers at Columbia University in New York have created embryos containing genetic material from three persons. This would be an embryo child with two mothers and one father. Then you have Pete Buttigieg's surrogate children. There are 18,000 of these surrogate children manufactured each year in this country. And I say manufactured because that's what's happening here, friends. This isn't parents making love. This is the manufacturing and then the totally weird womb-for-hire thing, which, by the way, we're running into friends, homeschoolers, Christians, who like the idea of surrogacy and wombs-for-hire. It's one of the most abominable things I think humans have ever come up with. Runs about $120,000. It's legal not everywhere. In fact, India just illegalized it. It was so horrendous, so horrific for some of these pagan nations to even consider. But Russia, Ukraine, and the United States are big on it. Russia, Ukraine, and the United States are big on surrogacy. Some of the more primitive nations or pagan nations or those that have less to do with the biblical view of things have thrown the thing out. It's just so awful. But surrogacy has taken off in America. It's now 18,000 per year. These violate God's moral laws. It's a clear violation of Exodus 22:21-24. It's the purposeful manufacturing of orphans. And I take it from Exodus 22:21-24. God's anger burns hot against people who do this kind of thing. According to Exodus 22. It says, no, you don't dare do this. Do not dare manufacture orphans. It's not your business. And that's what they're doing. In each of these cases, that's what they're doing. Well, friends, I'm just going to wrap up this segment with my wrap-up on the rise and fall of Western science in my book, Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West. This is how I wrap it up, because Christians contributed almost everything to modern science and technology. It was almost without exception Christians who brought about the most amazing medical, industrial, and scientific discoveries in the last 400 years. It was almost without exception Christians who did it. Born again, Bible-believing, Christ-following Christians did almost every single scientific and technological breakthrough of the last 200 to 300 years. But the last 50 years have been very bad. It's the fall of Western science. The 21st century produced children born of three parents, artificial insemination, surrogate wombs, millions of disposable snowflake children, human-animal hybrids, artificial wombs, innumerable other monstrosities. The overuse of antibiotics made the world more susceptible to highly resistant superbugs. The natural is traded for the unnatural. Children conceived outside of human relationship and then institutionalized, womb to tomb. There was no end to what Dr. Frankenstein would do, absent of the fear of God and all biblical morality. Would proud scientists set the world up for the most spectacular failure in all of human history? But modern man has already lost grip on the definition of good itself, since technology has enabled mass abortion, total conception control, easy pornography access at every moment of the day, gene-edited designer children who wouldn't bother us with their problems, well-cultivated relationships by social media, and ever-increasing Bitcoin values. Did all this amount to an existential good? In the tech-savvy age, personally faded. Human relationships were increasingly tenuous, short-lived, shallow, broken, or non-existent. There was no time for genuine relationships. No time for worshiping God either. Children, marriage, family, community were no longer a blessing, and the media saturated life as self-worship, entertainment, escapism, convenience, distraction, depersonalization. The good life was no longer seen as rooted in relationship, voluntary giving, self-denial, service, for modern life with some big government security and welfare, access to information, technology, and big insurance programs was geared to insulate us from all of that. What was the good life anyway? In a rational moment, some were asking what man would do given the power and technology to destroy himself. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked, and modern man had already used medical technology to kill 5 to 8 billion babies since 1960. What would he do with nuclear warheads and biological or chemical warfare? What would he do in the Wuhan labs? What would happen after 100 years of teaching science sans the fear of God in American high school and college classrooms? What comes of all of this? An assessment of the total cost benefit of the entire conglomeration of modern technology upon human society would have discovered there was enough to destroy mankind, or at least subjugate him. And so on it goes. I don't have the time to wrap up the entire conclusion to my conclusion to the rise and fall of science in the Western world, but you can get the story in Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West. And I think the most interesting chapter, and maybe because I'm an engineer and scientist myself, but most interesting chapter is The Rise and Fall of Western Science. Get the story at our website, generations.org. It's called Epoch. This is Kevin Swanson and Bill Jack, and we invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.